It's 10 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 o'clock, the Food Show reports on threats posed by Big Dairy in Oregon. Stay tuned, KBOO Portland.
Flashpoints, noted author and editor Vijay Prashan on Kashmir and the assassination of his colleague, the noted editor and courageous journalist Sujat Bukhari. Also, we'll feature a special report on a Border Patrol agent who ran down on purpose a member of the Tohono O'odham tribe whose land straddles both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border. And we'll feature a commentary by noted radical author Michael Parenti on 1918. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And we are delighted to welcome back to our airwaves Vijay Prashad. He is now the executive director of Tricontinental Institute for Social Research. And he's the chief editor at Left Word Books. Vijay Prashad, always good to have you back. I know you've been traveling, but you are back in the United States. And well, let's begin with the latest, the 16th newsletter of the Institute, which opens with a very sad write-up on the murder of somebody who you knew pretty well, and the latest murder of journalists that have become under more and more scrutiny and more risk in terms of their lives, Middle East, in Palestine. It's a troubling situation. Do you want to tell people a little bit about Sujat Bukhari in the context of his work working in that most dangerous part of the world?
Yes, thanks a lot, Dennis. You know, Sujat Bukhari was a very fine man, a very calm man, a person, you know, highly respected in Kashmir, well known in other parts of India, because Sujat was for many years the bureau chief of the Hindu newspaper for which I write, and then he was the correspondent and really the head of station for Frontline, another magazine with which I've been associated for 25 years. In our world of the Hindu and Frontline, we highly respected the reports that came from Sujat from Kashmir, partly because, you know, he was an honest reporter. I've started to feel that there is a way to categorize, you know, our profession between those who are stenographers and those who are journalists. You know, the stenographers are those who basically, you know, take dictation from the powerful and, you know, amplify the voice of the powerful. They don't challenge, you know, how the powerful see things. And then there are journalists, you know, reporters who at great risk challenge the narrative of the powerful, challenge the understanding of how the world operates. And Sujat was, of course, a reporter, a journalist. He was the editor of an important newspaper called Kashmir Rising. And, you know, in his career, marked, I think, by very important stories that he wrote, but in his career, he was fairly, clear that it's very hard to find, you know, an easy answer to something like the situation in Jammu and Kashmir. And he reported, therefore, in a heartfelt way from the standpoint of the people and what this conflict means for the people. You know, I think there is that genuine journalists are an endangered species, because when you go out there to report the world from the standpoint of the people, you cross the line of somebody powerful, and you know what happens is you disappear. I mean, I've seen so many friends in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, in Turkey, you know, people that I've known personally, that I've traveled and reported with, be killed by the state. I mean, there was a friend of mine in Pakistan who was picked up by Pakistani intelligence in May of 2011. He had chased the Bin Laden story. He had various exposés, you know, in his back pocket, and his body was found north of Karachi, mutilated. You know, it was later that Seymour Hersh wrote about some of the things that Salim Shehzad had already found out and was ready to write about. But before he could tell us, as a real journalist, from a people-oriented and people-centered perspective, before he could tell us what had happened with the Bin Laden story, Pakistani intelligence killed him. So many very, very important people, which is why I'm saying to you, Dennis, that this kind of reporting, these kind of reporters are an endangered species.
Could you, first of all, explain exactly how he was murdered and how the murder followed, I believe, his reporting of the killing of an activist who was Kaiser Bot, who was run down in the street at a protest. Could you set that up for us?
Yes, for sure. Let's take some context here. You know, Kaiser Bot was a 20-year-old young man who was helping raise his two sisters, aged 16 and 11. They lived with their uncle and aunt. You know, a normal Kashmiri family. Their parents had died, so they had been adopted essentially into the extended family. And Kaiser Bhatt, for, you know, reasons that are quite obvious, had become somebody active on the street. And one of the things that Shujat Bukhari and other reporters had shown, were able to show, because they are compassionate reporters, they were able to show that somebody like Kaiser Bhatt is actually the rule, not the exception. You know, from the standpoint of law and order thinking, that is to say, from the standpoint of the state, from the standpoint of the stenographer's reporting, the issue is law and order and terrorism and so on. And what they would like to suggest is that somebody like Kaiser Bhatt, a 20-year-old young man, is an aberration, is a terrorist, and therefore must be run over by a jeep. But what Shujat Bukhari and others, I think with great sensitivity, demonstrated is that Kaiser Bhatt is just an ordinary Kashmiri. And in fact, he reverses the question or the burden of proof and says that we don't have to wonder why Kaiser Bhatt became a militant. What we have to wonder about is why all the other young people don't become militants. Because the context of Kashmir, Shujat Bukhari had demonstrated in his journalism, the context of Kashmir almost demands that the population rise up in revolt. And I think that's, you know, the kind of reporting that the Indian state certainly didn't appreciate. And I should put it, I think, clearly that it's also reporting that some of the militants didn't appreciate, because he was also critical of the way that some militant groups, you know, had basically inflamed the situation, you know, trying to have their own petty advantages be secured rather than the will of the people. And so he was killed by, you know, masked gunmen who came on a motorcycle. And as he was leaving his office, going to an iftar party to break his fast, you know, during the month of Ramadan, at that point they got off the motorcycle, shot him, and he died on the spot. And then they jumped back on their motorcycles and disappeared. And it's very unlikely that those exact people will be caught. If they are caught, it's unlikely that the handlers will be fingered. So I think it's, you know, put down to the fact that Shujat Bukhari is another one of those journalists like Serena Shim, for instance, who was killed in Turkey while reporting on the war in Syria. Her car was run down by a cement truck. Not clear who killed her. All fingers point to Turkish intelligence. Very hard to establish. You know, Salim Shehzad was killed after he was last seen entering Pakistani naval intelligence in Karachi. His body was found in a ditch. Very hard to establish that it was indeed the intelligence services that killed each of these three journalists. But we know that, you know, whether you are able to forensically establish who precisely killed them, we know who killed them. It was people of great power who were threatened, I think, by the honesty and sensitivity of these very genuine and brave journalists.
And of course, this was not the first threat to this very courageous journalist. He had been kidnapped in the past, right? This was almost a part of the beat that he was on.
Yes, I mean, you know, those who have reported from areas of a great conflict and tension know full well that the dangers are extreme. I mean, you know, you don't know who's going to kill you. I mean, when he was abducted, he, reflecting on that, made a statement. He said, you know, I don't know who the enemies are. I mean, I know this as something quite physical. I mean, you know, there are times when people point a gun at you when you're in a place of war or tension. You don't know whose gun it is. You know, you're not out there to have a debate with the person. You know, some militia group stops you at a checkpoint and they put a gun in your face. You're not thinking, you know, which side are you on? You're thinking right there is the end of my life, because they don't, you know, necessarily, you know, want to have a conversation about you as a journalist. I mean, are you an espionage agent? You remember that it's not just a checkpoint in the middle of nowhere with a masked, mostly man with a gun. It's also, of course, for instance, the United States that targeted the Al Jazeera office in the Palestine Hotel in Baghdad during the 2003 invasion of Iraq, when, you know, the Al Jazeera had given the Americans the coordinates of where they were broadcasting from, and then the Americans bombed their media center. You know, so this is a serious issue, this sort of disregard for the person who's out there to get the story. I mean, we know, Dennis, that in war and in conflict of various kinds, control of the story is a very important part of warfare. You know, this information warfare game is a very important feature. So, you know, going after reporters who are trying to tell different stories is very much part of the agenda of war making. And that is why, on the one side, it might be this random person at a checkpoint putting a gun at your face, and the other is it could be a tank or a drone that strikes you because you're just an inconvenience in terms of the narrative that the powerful want to put out.
I believe that the United States bombed the media center in the former Yugoslavia in Belgrade during that attack and wounded and killed a bunch of journalists. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Vijay Prashad. He's the executive director of Tricontinental Institute for Social Research. He's the chief editor for Left Word Books. And again, we are really sorry to hear about somebody who you worked with, who you considered a colleague. These assassinations have to stop, and we have to stand up for the folks who have the courage to tell the truth and put their lives on the line. Thank you, Vijay, for being with us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Dennis. Thanks a lot.
In Berkeley, I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. Well, you may have heard by now that a Border Patrol agent attempted to run over a Native American man who was really living on his reservation. We're talking about the Tohono O'odham Reservation, which overlaps both sides of the U.S.-Mexico border. And apparently, a Border Patrol agent didn't like the idea of somebody filming. Well, joining us to talk about this is somebody who's been watching it very closely, is Amy Wan. Amy Wan works with the International Indian Treaty Council, and she is a member of this tribe. Amy, thank you for joining us on Flashpoints. Could you please set up the situation, explain what was going on, and then what happened?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to see you. Good morning. We are on the Tohono O'odham Nation, and I think what everybody first needs to understand is that the presence of Border Patrol is very heavy. The Tohono O'odham Nation is very militarized, and that having Border Patrol agents go through your yard is nothing new. And so because of that, there are families who are educated on knowing their rights and who do document their interactions with Border Patrol. And so Paolo and his family are one of them, because they have had past interactions with Border Patrol. And that's more information that's going to come out from the family themselves. But just what happened that day was routine, basically, for Paolo, is, you know, documenting these things. And so what happened was he noticed that there was a Border Patrol agent in their yard, because like many Native American communities and families, you know, our family houses are all together, not necessarily just one house. And so Paolo's family homes are around the home that they live in now, and the home that the Borp Shoigen was at was an older home that belonged to his grandparents. It's abandoned now. Nobody lives in there, but still, you know, they were in their yard. So what Paolo started doing was he started documenting this agent in their yard, from where you can see him standing in the video. And he did walk out onto the road. I know there's been a lot of speculations that people are like, well, why did he walk onto the road? Or he got in the way, or he threw himself in front of the video. But I think if you watch the video very closely, yes, he did walk out onto the road, but there was a lot of space. There was no reason for this this agent to hit him the way that he did. But as he's filming, the agent does see him.